The Action Network Podcast, named Best Betting Podcast or Radio Show by the Fantasy Sports and Gaming Association, and the number one show for the invested sports fan.
All right, here we go.
From the 10, throwing end zone. Spectacular catch.
They're saying it's a catch. Touchdown.
You see, most gamblers, when they go to gamble, they go to win.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
Big bank, small bank, I like to make money.
All right.
That is the ultimate kibosh.
You want to bet?
And we are underway.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another NFL Fantasy Flex episode of the award-winning Action Network podcast presented by BetMGM, the official odds provider of the show. I'm Matthew Friedman, the editor-in-chief of Fantasy Labs, and here with me are Sean Corner and Chris Raybon. Sean is the Action Network Director of Predictive Analytics, and Chris is a senior editor and analyst at the Action Network. They are two of the best fantasy football rankers in the world. In this episode, we are highlighting the players at the top of our week 13 rankings in the fantasy tool at Action Network. We are discussing the guys we're high and low on and looking at how they do in our Fantasy Labs models. And we are speculating on some player props. Fellas, it is the week after Thanksgiving. We are officially in the home stretch. Sean, how was your holiday?
It was good. Pretty chill. I kind of wish we had that third game against the Ravens and Steelers, but 2020 took that away from us, of course. But it was fun nonetheless.
Oh, I wouldn't say it took it away from us. It just infinitely postponed it. So, you know, we still have that to look forward to. As we are recording this, we are assuming that that game will be played on Wednesday night. But, you know, who knows? Your guess is probably better than mine. Raybon, how was your Thanksgiving?
It's pretty good, pretty chill, you know, continue to have some pie at all hours of the night, some leftovers at all hours of the night. So I enjoy it.
I didn't abstain from pie, but I limited my pie intake. So I view that as a massive victory. You know, as weird as last week was with all the news, for some reason, everything seemed to line up for me. Like I felt like a chess player who was seeing the board really well. Like I crush props. Every week, the three of us put our favorite player props in the Action Network app. Sean, I know you did especially well on props last weekend. Also just betting. I made literally the biggest sports bet of my life on Saints as 14-point favorites against the quarterbackless Broncos, which Sean, I think you referred to that as just pure gambling, but whatever. I was gambling. I felt I had a pretty big edge there. We talked about that bet in that game on the Sunday morning live show on the Action Network Twitter handle. That bet worked out. With all of the news, I didn't even bother trying to make a cash game lineup until about an hour before lock. That lineup came together on the first try. It took about 3 minutes to make and ended up having actually a pretty decent DFS week. And then on the show last week, I was on Deshaun Watson versus the Lions. That crushed. I was off Carson Wentz, despite the good matchup against the Seahawks. I was on Antonio Gibson, total smash. I was off of Alvin Kamara and Raybon. We are definitely going to talk about Kamara and his receiving usage later. I was on Tyreek versus the Bucks, nailed that one. And I was off of Hopkins versus the Pats. And I think I specifically said that it felt like he would finish with around 50 yards, which was just perfection. So overall, pretty much the best week I'm going to have all year, which means this week is going to be totally miserable. So something for everyone to look forward to, basically just fade everything I say. Guys, let's get into it. The three quarterbacks at the top of our week 13 rankings, which again, you can find at Action Network. The three quarterbacks are Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson. I don't think much of a surprise there. You could maybe make an argument for, you know, one or two other quarterbacks who could get into the top three, but you know, that feels pretty consensus-y. Raybon, I let Sean go first last week. So this week I'm going to kick it to you. Who are you relatively high on at the quarterback position for week 13?
So looking at the pricing on DraftKings, I think anytime you see Cam Newton at 5,800, I think you have to look at him. I know he had a terrible game against the Cardinals last week, and he's had a few of those, but you need that kind of rushing production, that rushing upside on a weekly basis. And the Chargers, they've been kind of, their defense hasn't really stopped anyone much of the year, even though they have some pieces. So I like Cam Newton at 5,800 going against the Chargers.
Sean, who are you on this week?
I like Aaron Rodgers at his price point. He's 6,800. No Patrick Mahomes on the slate, so don't have to worry about him. Russell Wilson is the highest priced QB, and you know Seattle's running it a little bit more than I would like right now. Deshaun Watson, you know, he's without Will Fuller. And, you know, Kyler Murray, I don't think we could trust him right now with his shoulder. So Aaron Rodgers stands out as a truly elite play, in my opinion. He's on fire right now. He's thrown, or he's scored at least 3 touchdowns in 5 straight games. I think Alan Lazard being back helps him in a huge way. And the only reason he ended with, you know, just 211 yards against the Bears is they didn't put up much of a fight. So he didn't really have to keep throwing, but you could tell he was on his way to, you know, 350 yards if he needed to. So I love him this week at 6,800, just based on the pricing of the other QBs. And the other guy is Mitch Trubisky is probably the best cheap option at 5,400. This is an easy matchup against the Lions, of course. The Bears actually have a higher team total right now than the Chargers, Cardinals, or Falcons, which is weird to say, but they should be able to put up points this week. And if Nick Foles is inactive again, that helps Trubisky because we don't need to worry about an in-game benching. But obviously, if Nick Foles is healthy enough to be active and there's QB controversy or anything like that, I'll probably back off. So Trubisky's GPP only play for me this week.
Sean, you mentioned Rodgers, and he's popping in almost all of the DraftKings models that we have at Fantasy Labs. As you mentioned, just kind of truly elite production that we've been seeing out of him recently. A guy I'm high on, and I already know that in my stomach, this is painful, and I want to adjust the projections down, and I probably will, but I'm high right now on Kirk Cousins at home going against Jacksonville. The Jags have allowed the 3rd most fantasy points to opposing quarterbacks. They're 30th in defensive pass DVOA. If you look at our Vegas dashboard, you see that the Vikings have a slate high implied Vegas total of 30.5 points. Even if he doesn't get a lot of yards, I think he will have multiple opportunities to get passing touchdowns. So he's someone I'm high on right now as a streamable quarterback. And normally I never want Kirk Cousins or anyone of that general ilk, just because I think they don't have enough upside. But this week, I think he might be someone I actually take a look at. Raybon, who are you low on?
So I think we have to be a little bit careful with Kyler Murray. He just doesn't look quite as explosive or effective since that shoulder injury. I mean, you know, the game against Seattle a couple weeks ago was disappointing. And then to follow that up, you know, New England coming into that game, they were bottom 2-3 in almost every defensive metric. So this is not a New England defense, you know, even with Belichick that we're used to seeing and 2 straight bad performances. Now you're going against this Rams defense that has been one of the best in the league all year long, top 5 against in points versus opposing quarterbacks in fantasy. So Kyler Murray at 7,600, you're never going to completely ignore him in like a tournament setting, but I think it's time to kind of look at some of the other guys at the top, because he's in a stretch of the season where he just seems to be struggling. It's probably something to do with that shoulder.
Sean, I have a feeling that you might have just gotten sniped there. I definitely got sniped. Murray was the guy I was going to talk about. I mean, normally you would have him locked into the top 3, maybe the number 1 overall fantasy quarterback. This week, I have him around number 7. And Raybon, as you mentioned, with that shoulder injury, he's not throwing as well, but really he's not running as much. And that is the key thing. He gets most of his value with his legs. And if he's not running, he's still, I think, a quarterback 1, but you do have to adjust your assumptions down for him. Sean, who are you low on?
Yeah, you guys sniped Kyler Murray from me. I think it's pretty clear that the shoulder injury is bugging him. Yeah, I thought, you know, he'd probably run the ball more and he'd still have a pretty high floor, but that doesn't appear to be the case as well. So we kind of have to stay away from him, especially at 7,600 against this Rams defense. The other guy I'm a bit low on, comparatively speaking, would be Josh Allen. I'm just downgrading him a tad after his dreadful performance against the Chargers. He's obviously a very volatile player and could bounce back as the QB1 this week. But, you know, we're probably not debating, like, you know, Freeman, you and I, sometimes we accidentally have him projected as a QB1 overall, and we're kind of double-checking things. He's pretty solidly in the mid-QB1 range right now. He's more like the Josh Allen we remember from last year than this, you know, MVP candidate from early in the season. I think one of the things that we need to consider is, you know, without John Brown, he does seem to lack that true ceiling. You know, he's averaged 26.6 fantasy points with John Brown in the lineup and only 18.4 fantasy points without John Brown, which is still good. But I think it's one of those things where John Brown might be that key to unlocking his ceiling. So I'm a bit low on him. The next couple weeks, he has a tougher matchup against the Niners, who have Richard Sherman back. They look like they're coming back to life. And then he has the Steelers next week. So just downgrade your expectations for him. You got to start him, obviously. But hopefully he'll be back to his elite self come fantasy playoffs, and hopefully he'll get John Brown back by then.
All right, one guy we haven't mentioned, Taysom Hill. And I am imagining, Sean, that maybe the quarterback prop for week 13 has to do with Taysom Hill, but maybe not, because we've kind of been down that road before. And maybe it would be a little too embarrassing to Chris Raybon if we talked too much about Taysom Hill. But Sean, give us the quarterback prop for week 13, which, by the way, I should say, I'm cutting back in. I should say that everyone should check out the Fantasy Labs prop tool, where the props with a bet quality of 10 have a 60% win rate over the past 2 years. And of course, when player props are posted, you can bet them at BetMGM. Okay, Sean, give us the prop.
Taking a break from Saints props this week. So it's not Taysom Hill. It's Deshaun Watson. His passing yards this week against the Colts without Will Fuller, without Randall Cobb, without Kenny Stills. What are we doing with him? I have his over-under set at 272.5.
This is one of the rare instances in which I will be taking an under on you, Sean, but it's pretty close. I have it at 268.5.
I have it a little bit higher than that, so I'll go – I'm going to go under, but just by a hair. I had it just by a hair, but I'm going to lower it about a tenth. If I lower his YPA by a tenth, it goes under, so I'm going under. The Colts are a tough matchup. And that's a lot of firepower to lose when you're talking about not only Will Fuller, but also Kenny Stills, who was a pretty reliable wide receiver for. Now you have Kiki QT, who's more of a slot receiver. So just a different type of receiver that they're kind of subbing in there in this rotation.
Hope you're enjoying this great Action Network podcast. I want to make sure you know about the Locked On Podcast Network. Locked On has a daily podcast on your favorite team.
Welcome to you, Locked On 49ers.
You are locked on to the Dallas Mavericks.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast.
Let's go!
Locked On podcasts are hosted by the local experts who know your team better than anyone and give you the inside scoop. So go to your podcast app and search Locked On, your favorite team. Subscribe to your Locked On podcast.
Okay, let's talk about the running backs who are at the top of our rankings at Action Network. Our top three, Dalvin Cook, Derrick Henry, and James Robinson. I think you can make a case for a couple of other guys. Austin Eckler looked great in his return to action last week. Aaron Jones, as a big home favorite, could be a guy who potentially sneaks into the top three there. But Raybon, who are you high on at the running back position this week?
For me, I think it's still James Robinson, at fifth highest priced running back on DraftKings at 7,300. And they're just not putting him in that elite tier with, Cook and Henry, who are 2,200 and 1,900 more expensive respectively. So until they're doing that, I'm going to continue to play him in cash games. I think, you look at Jacksonville and they're feeding him. They use him just like essentially Derrick Henry's used in Tennessee, except with more pass game usage. So I really like James Robinson. Minnesota, that defense, not quite the same as it's been, under Mike Zimmer. We're seeing that week after week. So as a focal point of this offense, I love James Robinson, especially at 7,300.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, I feel like every week you basically at this point have to lock Robinson into the top five. And even thinking about next year, who knows, because it will probably be a new coaching staff. And, who knows if the new coaching staff values him that way. But, assuming he stays there and the coaching staff likes him, he looks like a first round pick in 2021 redraft leagues. Sean, who are you high on this week?
Well, this might be the most excited I've ever been, being able to play David Montgomery in DFS at 5,500. But he's facing the Lions, who have allowed the most fantasy points to opposing running backs. The Bears are actually a 3.5-point favorite against the Lions, so they should run the ball a ton. I mean, Montgomery's really their only running back. Sure, you know, Cordell Patterson might see a few carries in this game, but, you know, Montgomery's going to get close to 100% of the backfield work. He finally broke a big game. He looked pretty good on that 57-yard run against the Pack. You know, so maybe we'll get big volume and efficiency for Monty for a change. Ran a route on 74% of dropbacks, which is why, you know, he had a pretty good line of 5 catches, 40 yards and a touchdown. I mean, that's a pretty elite rate for running back. We could project him for close to 3 to 4 catches if he keeps that up. So love Monty this week at that price. And the other guy is Nyheim Hines. He's 5,300 at Houston. He will obviously be a free square play if for some reason Jonathan Taylor can't suit up again this week. But, you know, I'm expecting Taylor to return, and that should suppress Hines ownership. But, you know, I consider Hines a pretty high floor ceiling player, even when Taylor's in the lineup. You know, obviously Taylor's return will lower his projection in my model, but, you know, Hines still has that high floor given he's going to see all the passing down work. And then, you know, the Colts use a hot hand approach at running back. So he still might end up being the leading back in carries this week. So he still possesses that really high ceiling. So he could be a sneaky play this week at 5,300.
Okay, one guy that I'm high on, and I mean, I feel like this is my third week in a row mentioning him, but I'm going to keep on doing it. Antonio Gibson, and this is not a good spot for him. I freely admit that. At Pittsburgh, the Steelers are very good against the run, so it's not a good spot, but I am still high on him, and he's really starting to emerge, especially in the receiving game. Last week, he had a season-high 7 targets, and we know, I think at this point, how explosive he is and the fact that he will be used heavily in the running game. But if he's starting to carve out more of a role in the receiving game, you know, since the week 8 bye, he has 4 targets per game and he was a wide receiver in college. So I think he does have that 3-down skill set. We are starting to see it. If he is starting to be used in a well-rounded way, even in a tough matchup against the Steelers, I think he will have an elevated floor. And the fact is, he's getting goal line touches. I mean, he has 11 touchdowns in 11 games. So it's not like he's an automatic bet to score a touchdown, but he is almost as good of a bet to score a touchdown, especially given that he's on a bad team and he's still scoring touchdowns. He's almost as good of a bet to score touchdowns as any other player in the league. So I really like Antonio Gibson. I think he's right up there with James Robinson in terms of rookie running backs who look like they could be really good for a number of seasons moving forward. Like him for this week. Raybon, who are you low on?
So this is going to depend on whether Jacobs suits up, but I'm down on both Raider running backs. You know, Josh Jacobs, if he plays at the Jets, or if he's out, Devontae Booker at 5,500, I think he'll get a lot of ownership. But this Jets defense, you know, the one thing that they can do respectably well is stop the running game. They are allowing just 3.51 adjusted line yards per carry. And we saw in that Miami game, it seemed like every time the Dolphins running back, you know, took a carry against the Jets, they ended up fumbling. So you know, it's just kind of a tough situation where the Raiders haven't been running the ball as well this year as we've expected. You know, Derek Carr's had a great season for the most part, but that running game hasn't quite been the same. So I think if Jacobs sits out and Booker plays, it's going to be a little bit of a trap. And if Jacobs plays, you know, he's way overpriced, I think at 7,400 in this kind of matchup. So not a fan of the Raider running backs at the New York Jets.
Sean, who are you fading?
So, well, I agree with pretty much everything you said about Antonio Gibson. I think he's a fade this week. Just because, you know, he's 6,800. That's the ninth most expensive running back. Everybody's going to want to play him this week. Everybody's going to want to play him. But he's playing the Steelers, so you have to take that into account. And, you know, Pittsburgh might be coming off a glorified bye week. We'll see in the next couple days. But, you know, I think you fade him this week. You lower your expectations a bit. But going forward, I think he could be an RB5 type play just because, like you said, his receiving usage went way up. His routes run per dropback actually went up to 61%, doubling J.D. McKissick's. And I was saying, you know, once that happens, he's a top 5 running back. So I think everything's happening at once, but he has his bad matchup. So I think this is the last week I think I'll ever fade him. But going forward, I mean, he has, you know, the Niners, Seahawks, and then the Panthers. So, you know, he's going to be playing the Panthers in the fantasy football finals. And I really think he could be, you know, top three, top five back. So I'm that high on him. But having said that, I think he's a fade this week in DFS.
Yeah, Sean, I get it. It's prudent. I'm way too high on him. And a
Where
lot
do you
of
have
it,
him ranked right now?
Number five.
Okay.
Like that's aggressive. I know that's aggressive, and I will probably need to make adjustments throughout the week. And honestly, part of it might be based on the Vegas totals, like the assumptions that I have in there. Cause some of that honestly might be wrong because the Steelers as of recording, like they haven't played yet. And so not all of the lines are posted. So I could see just whenever that is updated within my models that ends up adjusting him.
Yeah. Down. I have the football team's team total at 17 right now.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think maybe that's why I'm probably way lower.
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit higher on that, and so I think that will adjust down. But still, I'm going to be pretty optimistic on him, just because of his natural talent and then the role he has within that offense. Okay, Sean, give us the player prop.
We're gonna go with Austin Eckler's receiving yards. And, you know, the thing about this game was he was supposed to be limited. So, of course, he gets 14 carries and 11 catches. So it makes it a bit tricky projecting what he'll have in a full role this week, potentially. But right now I have his projection at – well, let me set the line for you guys. I'm going to have to maybe make it a little bit higher. But
you're mainly adjusting it up.
Well, right? It's so early in the week. How can you have a projection for this yet? But I'm going to set the line at 46.5 receiving yards.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
How much did you inflate it by relative to your projection?
Just a few yards.
Yeah. I will still go over. I will be the Eckler optimist here, and I will go over. I think he's basically Christian McCaffrey light. You know, I don't want to say that you just like automatically project him for like an 18% target share or something like that, but he has that well within his range of outcomes. So I will take the over here.
Yeah, I'm going over as well. It's not only that he has that, you know, 5+ catch potential, but just throughout his career, he's actually been one of the most efficient running backs in terms of yards per reception. So in my model, I think he actually may be the running back with the highest yards per reception, which is not a stat that it regresses to the mean a lot. So that's actually saying a lot for a running back to kind of separate himself in that. So he doesn't necessarily even need, to hit catch expectations because he's very good at making big plays on those catches. So yeah, I'm going over.
Yeah, and Raybon, you're right there. Year in and year out, he's one of the most efficient running backs in the league at turning targets into yards. That's a big part of it. He doesn't really even need all that many targets. That said, I still think he's going to get targets.
Yeah, I was going to say he's actually the second highest in terms of yards per catch in my model. Alvin Kamara is the top, but Kamara needs catches to get that. You know, so
I hear Kamara does need catches.
Yeah, he needs to catch the ball for that to matter.
Sean, glad you brought that up. It was very fortuitous. That reminds me that I forgot to say that I'm down on Alvin Kamara once again this week. Big surprise. I still think that he's an RB1. If you have him, you still play him. But we have a situation now. And granted, the first game with Taysom Hill was Taysom Hill's first NFL start. So maybe that's not representative. And reportedly, the Saints last week did change their offensive game plan once they knew that they were going to be going against a practice squad wide receiver playing the quarterback position. So honestly, maybe the two games that we've seen out of Taysom Hill, maybe those aren't representative. And I would expect that we see this week more than, you know, 1.5 targets going to Alvin Kamara. But, you know, that said, in two games, he has 3 targets, which he has leveraged into -2 yards receiving. So not a great look for the Taysom Hill offense in terms of what it means for Alvin Kamara, because if he's not getting his targets, then his floor is significantly weakened. So again, if you have him, you still start him. I think you still have to rank him as if he's an RB1, but you just have to, you know, be aware that there is significant downside with him. Raymond, I know last week we had a pretty lively conversation on Kamara and his receiving workload. What are your thoughts now that we've seen two games out of Taysom Hill?
So the issue coming into last week was that if you looked at his routes run, him and Latavius split them in that first matchup against the Falcons, 37% each. So my whole thought was, okay, he's going to rebound in that area. Taysom Hill threw, I think it was 23 passes in that first matchup, which is down obviously from Breeze, but you figure, okay, he's going to rebound. And he actually did. He ran 64%, around on 64% of the dropbacks compared to 36 for Murray, which is more or so in line with Kamara's usage. Murray's playing a little bit more, period. But the problem is Taysom Hill, the volume is so far down that you are going to now reduce Kamara's receiving usage, not based on the routes, you know, percentage-wise, but just based on the fact that you're not expecting Taysom Hill to throw as many passes. So, yeah, I have Kamara in that three and a half catch range now, which is significantly down, and that's based on the Saints just not throwing the ball as much. So I think the game plans will essentially even out. That was encouraging last week, but the bottom line is if Taysom Hill's throwing the ball, you know, anywhere from 15 to 25 times a game and Drew Brees was throwing it, you know, anywhere from like 30 to 40, then there's going to be a dip.
So Raybon, you said around three and a half receptions, yeah, is what you're thinking for, yep, Kamara. And granted, it's early in the week, so that could change. Sean, does that kind of fall in line with what you are roughly thinking right now?
Yeah, I have him projected, you know, right around three catches. You know, last week we have to throw the entire game out on both sides. We can't really evaluate that game because, you know, Saints didn't have to do much. You call that one, Friedman, by the way. But yeah, I just think with Kamara, he doesn't jive as much with Taysom Hill. You know, I mentioned last week that Taysom Hill is probably more likely to pull it down and run then dump it off to Kamara. And we haven't even seen the design screens to Kamara that I thought we'd see. So if it's based on just improvisation, I don't think Kamara's going to see much work. And it does make sense to just, you know, pound Latavius up the middle when defenses have to worry about Taysom, you know, scrambling on the edges. You know, Latavius Murray and Taysom Hill is a pretty dynamic combo. And I'm just worried about Kamara's rushing upside as well. So yeah, I'm pretty low on Kamara in both in terms of rushing and receiving production still.
The NFL season is upon us, and our friends at BetMGM Sports are offering Action Network podcast listeners a great sign-up offer. Just make your first deposit using the bonus code ACTIONPOD and receive a 100% deposit match up to $500. They've got parlay bonus payouts, live betting markets, daily odds boosts, all sorts of great stuff. So download the BetMGM app today or visit BetMGM.com to sign up and use the code ACTIONPOD to double your bankroll with a 100% deposit match up to $500. As a reminder, you must be 21 or older and physically located in the great states of Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Nevada, or West Virginia. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado and Nevada, 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey and West Virginia, or 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Promo offer not available in Nevada. And now, back to the show.
All right, let's talk about the wide receivers that we have at the top of our rankings. Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams, Stephon Diggs. You can maybe make some arguments for some other guys who could be in the top three. Keenan Allen, DK Metcalf, Justin Jefferson. All of those guys are in the top six for us, so they're knocking on the door. Raybon, who are you high on this week?
I'm going with Brandon Cooks. You look at the Houston Texans, and I mean, they're essentially down two wide receivers. And, you know, I know it's a tough defense in Indianapolis, but somebody's got to catch the ball, and, you know, for Houston. So I'm going with Brandon Cooks here just because I think Deshaun Watson, he can make plays kind of improvisational wise. And you look at Indianapolis and these last couple weeks, and, you know, they've got against some, you know, explosive number one receivers, Devontae Adams and AJ Brown. And those guys have put up numbers. And I think it's part to do with You know, just kind of the scheme and the quarterbacks, and in part to do with those wide receiver skills. But Brandon Cooks just has the potential for such a huge target share that I'm willing to fade the matchup here, especially, you know, he's 5,600, which is usually kind of that wide receiver 2-3 pricing anyway. So you're potentially getting, you know, that number one wide receiver production at a discounted cost anyway.
Sean, who are you high on this week?
I'm pretty high on Denzel Mims. He's still way too cheap at 4,100. Last week, I'm still hitting myself. I shied away, even though liking, I think he was like 3,500 or something ridiculous. I shied away just due to the tough matchup, but he was still able to post a pretty solid 4-catch, 67-yard game against the Dolphins. Has a great matchup this week against Vegas. Obviously, you know, Crowder and Perryman cap his floor ceiling a bit, but you know, he has legit wide receiver 2-3 potential if one of them were to ever go down. But you know, in the meantime, I still think he's way too cheap, even with the crowded receiving room at 4,100 with this matchup. He's way too talented to keep under wraps for much longer. And then the other is a pretty obvious play, in my opinion, is Robert Woods at 5,900 against the Cardinals. I mean, this isn't rocket science here. He's, you know, he's coming off a 14-11 target game stretch. His floor ceiling combos is way too high for this price. He had a massive 13-catch, 172-yard game against Arizona last year. It just seems way too cheap at this price.
Yeah, Sean, as you mentioned, in the two games last year against Arizona, he did really well. And one of those really was specifically shadowed by Patrick Peterson, and that wasn't much of a hindrance. So I expect that he will be shadowed again. Peterson has been shadowing for much of the past five games. So he probably will run a lot of routes against Peterson, but I honestly don't know how much that's going to matter. Also to your point about Denzel Mims, I think his matchup might be even a little bit better than we would normally get going against the Vegas Raiders, because Damon Arnett, one of their starting cornerbacks, has a concussion. And so if he's out, that means he's going to be running routes against backup Isaiah Johnson, who's a fourth round, second year backup, has 119 NFL coverage snaps in his career and a 38.7 PFF coverage grade this year. Like, that's a very winnable matchup. Even though Mims is a rookie, I think Mims would have a pretty clear edge there. So I definitely like both of those calls. A guy I am really high on is Justin Jefferson. And this dovetails with the Kirk Cousins call. The Jags are without four of their top five cornerbacks. Maybe some of those guys will return, so definitely keep an eye on that. But even when those guys are out there, the Jags are still not good against the pass. And if Adam Thielen is out once again, of course, also have to keep an eye on that. But assuming Thielen is out, I mean, Jefferson should once again be targeted very heavily. He had 13 targets last week without Thielen, 2 touchdowns. Normally it's Thielen getting the touchdowns, but in his absence, Jefferson is just getting everything. And since moving from the slot to the perimeter in week 3, Jefferson trails only Tyreek Hill with 848 yards receiving. I mean, on the perimeter, he really has been one of the best wide receivers in the league. He's not getting all of the touchdowns, but he's getting the yards. And with Thielen out, the touchdowns could really be there. So Jefferson is someone I really like with this matchup. Raybon, who are you low on?
DeAndre Hopkins. You look at the matchup, they're going against the Rams, who have the cornerbacks and there's the defensive scheme to limit him. And then his quarterback has been a little bit iffy, and that's just a bad combination. And then you start looking back through his game logs and the big games, you know, recently Detroit, that's a pretty bad defense, 137 yards. The Jets, 131 yards, another bad defense. Seattle in week 7, 103 yards. That's a bad defense. And then Buffalo, we had 127, but remember, he needed that Hail Mary to get there. He would have had a pretty, you know, kind of pedestrian line in that game as well. And then the other games, you have New England, 55 yards on 5 catches. The week before that, Seattle, the second time, 51 yards on 5 catches. And then against Miami, the game before the Buffalo game, 3 catches, 30 yards. So he's kind of been trending down and or, you know, taking advantage of great matchups. This is neither, and his quarterback again, is just not quite right. So I don't think DeAndre Hopkins is quite worth, that top tier wide receiver price in cash games, and deserves to be in the same tier with Devontae and Metcalf and Keenan Allen. I think he's more in, kind of going down. He should probably be in the 60s, 6,000s this week, but he's 7,800. That's too high.
Raybon, it's almost as if you are looking at the outline, which honestly,
no, I don't.
I know you don't, but I mean, Hopkins, he's the guy that I have there too. And you touched on everything. I'll add one thing here. The tough matchup against Jalen Ramsey, it's not as if he's going against just the best cornerback in the league. He's going against the best cornerback in the league who has shadowed him like every year for the past 4 years. So like Ramsey knows him. They have battled, for years since their days in the AFC South. And most of the time, Ramsey has gotten the better of him. A couple of times, Hopkins has gone off. But most of the time, Ramsey has been able to hold Hopkins in that 50-ish yard range. And I think once again, that is probably where we're going to see Hopkins, like knowing that he does have the ability to pop off for a big game. But it's more likely than not that Ramsey does a pretty good job of bottling him up. So I'm entirely with you there. I view Hopkins as more of a wide receiver two with upside than a wide receiver one. Sean, who are you low on?
Well, this guy kind of depends who starts at quarterback for the Dolphins this week, but I'm lower on Devontae Parker. Especially if Tua suits up. I think it's pretty clear by now that when Tua starts, Parker, sees a pretty significant drop off. And when Fitzmagic is in there, I give him a huge boost. But either way, the Dolphins should be able to beat the Bengals this week with a pretty run heavy game plan. They're favored by, I think, 12 points right now. And all their running backs might actually be healthy this week. So I think it's a great week for them to just have a more run heavy approach. And again, if Tua starts, I think I'm clearly fading him here. And then the other guy is Keenan Allen, who, I've been treating as just an auto play in DFS. I've been projecting him close to 8 receptions these past few games. But I think with Austin Eckler back, it does cut into his target share enough to lower him down to maybe wide receiver, 8 this week, which is enough for me to at least have some pause at 8,100. And, Herbert attempted 51 passes last week. They usually have massive volume. I think on the other side of the ball, you have the Patriots playing this run heavy offense that might kill the clock a bit and lower their overall volume. So, Keenan Allen's the type of player where just a slight decrease in his volume is going to send him down my rankings quite a bit. So I'm a bit lower on Allen this week.
Yeah, Sean, I'm with you there. Now, the prop for the wide receivers, who do we have?
I mean, how the hell can we even project Tyreek Hill at this point? It's almost impossible to set a line for him. So I'm just going to throw it out there. 91.5 receiving yards.
I will amazingly take the under. I have it closer to, 84.5. Which feels low. Instinctively, I want to take the over here. But, I go under.
Wait, you said you had 91.5, Sean?
Yeah, 91.5.
Wow, I don't know if you're looking at all of our rankings and, making a very intelligent line.
Actually,
I'm 92.
So you're way over. Actually, I haven't thought of that. I could actually look at your guys' projections. No, I'm too honest to do that. I didn't peek.
This is Tyreek Hill. This is, at the beginning of the season, this is the ones, obviously got a lot wrong, got a lot right. But this is one I was kind of screaming about. It was everyone was kind of down on Tyreek. Should we draft him in the same tier as these other top wide receivers? I mean, the quarterback for him and Patrick Mahomes and you look at the matchup in which he essentially put up the most fantasy points, what was it since Jamal Charles? I think it was for any player. And it's against one of the top defenses in the NFL. This is the type of talent that Tyreek Hill has. It's when they see a good defense that can stop the run or that can, plays well against the pass, they just target Tyreek Hill more and they go more pass heavy. So this Denver defense, another really good one, but there's no cornerback in this league at this point that really can guard Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, and if you think about it, his floor is super high right now, which is really scary to think. I would say week six was the only bad game, really. Other than that, he's either had over 75 yards or a touchdown every single game. So that's just scary to think that a guy with, you know, overall, obviously, wide receiver one overall upside every week and still, you know, he has this high floor. Yeah, it's insane.
You know, looking at this more, I'm going to need to adjust this up because I'm thinking about it, Raymond. You mentioned, yeah, the Broncos really don't have a cornerback who can stick with him. And I think that's especially the case now because Bryce Callahan, I think, is dealing with a foot injury. And he would match up much better with Tyreek than A.J. Boye, who just doesn't have the speed. You know, and we saw that with Carlton Davis last week. The guys who match up better with the bigger bodied wide receivers, those physical press cornerbacks, they cannot handle Tyreek Hill because he can just get by them. And so we might have another situation like that once again this week. So, yeah, I will probably be adjusting this up. But, yeah, Tyreek Hill. I mean, what to say here?
I thought the prop was going to be first quarter yards for Tyreek Hill.
Yeah. I thought you guys were going to jump on the over and say, yeah, he'll have that by the first quarter.
All right, let's look at the tight ends that we have in the Action Network rankings. Number one, Travis Kelce. Number two, Darren Waller. And then number three, and obviously a significant drop off between number two and number three, Hunter Henry. And, you know, I feel like I say this every week, you can make a case for maybe, you know, like five different guys in that number three spot. Raybon, who are you high on this week?
It's really ugly week in and week out. I think you look at TJ Hockenson again. I mean, you know, in Detroit, there's not a lot of good things going on, but Hockenson's been putting up big numbers. And the Bears are a defense that a little bit of a tight end funnel. We saw Tonyan get the big play against them last week. That's kind of been the norm for them. They've been really stout against receivers, and tight end has been one of the positions where they just give up a little more volume than usual. So, I mean, there's really just not many players to trust. You know, I think, you know, you look at Evan Ingram, and, you know, he's coming off a big game, but then you look at who's going to be at quarterback for the Giants and the fact that, you know, Seattle getting better on defense, it's kind of iffy. So I'm tempted to say Ingram, but I'm going to go with TJ Hockenson.
All right. Well, Raybon, I am going to indulge your temptation, and I'm going with Evan Ingram. And I do have him ranked number three, and I don't feel great about it. But it's, I mean, as you say, it's a really nasty position that we have here. No Daniel Jones. You know, maybe that's actually a good thing. Maybe Colt McCoy actually might be a better professional passer than Daniel Jones. Like, not outside the realm of possibility. Since week seven, we have Evan Ingram with 8.2 targets per game. And that volume is almost impossible to find at tight end. And so that, for me, like more than the possibility of maybe Colt McCoy is better than Daniel Jones, the volume for me is really what puts Evan Ingram number three on the board. And although he's going against the Seahawks, who have Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs at safety, they still haven't really been all that good against tight ends. It's pretty much an average matchup. So as long as he maintains that volume, I feel as decent as anyone can with Evan Ingram at number three.
I mean, to be fair, if you talk about poor professional passers, none is more poor than Carson Wentz this year. And seemed like the only guy that he could connect with was Richard Rodgers and Goddard on that Monday night game. So
yeah,
you're on to something there.
Sean, who are you high on?
Well, I agree with you guys that tight ends a crapshoot this week. I mean, no Kelce, no George Kittle, obviously, no Mark Andrews, and Waller's priced appropriately. So why not double down on Jordan Akins this week at the same price that he was on Thanksgiving, $2,900? I mean, he just missed on two touchdowns, and Deshaun Watson even addressed this in his post-game interview, saying he's going to make up for him this week. So I'm going to take him at his word. I'm going to double down on Akins here. And, you know, like, they're going to be without Will Fuller, no Randall Cobb, no Kenny Stills. So they're going to have to continue to target Akins, I think. Just way too cheap given the tight end position this week. It's hard to pass him up.
Yeah, we were talking before the show about where are all of these targets, these routes going to go? And you feel like, I mean, since they play so many tight end sets anyway, that it would be natural for some of that to flow towards Akins. And so, yeah, it's, you know, if you make even slight adjustments, you can juice Akins' projections pretty significantly. So there's upside there.
Yeah, we could see the classic Kiki QT 10 catches for 33 yard type game here too. So I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, it's pretty tricky projecting the Texans this week.
Raybon, who are you low on?
Everyone. I feel like I say this every week, but if I had to pick someone in particular, I would look at Dallas Goedert, because I think coming off this game against Seattle, his value is going to kind of be at an all-time high. We don't know if Ertz is going to be back yet. I think he started practicing. But Green Bay has been one of the better teams against the tight end position. And Richard Rodgers still mixing in there a little more than you like. But also, I think, you know, Carson Wentz has just been so unreliable that – if anything kind of goes wrong, I mean, even in this last game, I mean, I think Goddard caught, what was it, a fourth down touchdown pass. And like, it, you know, things could go really bad for Goddard, and he's running a lot of routes, and it's kind of tempting to put him up there. But I think just based on Carson Wentz's unreliability, like, I'm kind of downgrading all of the Philly pass catchers just a little. And then every time you see them play, it looks a little more like, they may go to Jalen Hurts for more than just one or two plays, which I don't necessarily think helps anyone in Philadelphia. So just a bad spot going at Lambeau. I think they could get smashed this week.
Talking about Jalen Hurts, just a second, Sean, do you think this is the Jalen Hurts game? Like, do you think this is the game that he actually gets sustained snaps at quarterback?
It should be, but, you know, then again, last night there were times I thought they should have brought him in. So who am I to say? But yeah, I think it's tough. They should probably give him an entire series as opposed to just one play and taking him off. But, you know, it's such a tough call because they're still in this playoff race. So you're not really throwing away the season, but, you know, how can you keep Wentz out there for every play like right now? So yeah, it's a tough call.
Yeah. I mean, at a minimum, it was really interesting to see the report from Michael Fabiano that they were going to use Jalen Hurts, give him more snaps, and smash bet the unders on Jalen Hurts. That was nice. Sean, who are you low on at the tight end position?
Raybon hit the nail on the head. It's everybody. So I'm gonna have to pick a tight end I actually love, which is TJ Hockenson. I just think this is a week where, you know, he's 5K. I've been using TJ pretty heavily the past few weeks, but, you know, this is earlier in the week speculation. It's possible that Kenny Golladay, Danny Amendola, and DeAndre Swift return this week, which, you know, Hockenson's been competing against Marvin Hall, Quintez Cephas, even Jamal Agnew, the converted cornerback to wide receiver for targets. So, you know, just the target share getting more evenly distributed when these guys return will impact TJ Hockenson's floor, which has been pretty high these past few weeks. So I'm just being a little cautious with him at 5K. It's one of those weeks where you don't really want to spend up on anybody at tight end. So he's the guy, you know, pending the final injury report at the end of the week, he's the guy that I think you can fade this week.
All right, Sean, give us the tight end prop.
Well, you hit on earlier, but it's Evan Engram receiving yards. I was curious to hear where you guys have him projected with Colt McCoy. I agree that it might not matter who's that quarterback. He might actually target him more than, you know, going to Darius Slayton down the field. So right now I have his projection at 45 and a half.
All right. Well, I feel like I've tipped my hand here, so I will have to go over. I have it. Sean, you said 45 and a half.
Yeah,
right?
45 and a half. Yeah.
Disgustingly, I have this at 55 and a half. So I am way over. I need to adjust that down.
I have it at 42. So I'll go under.
Right in the middle.
Yeah, we don't have the updated numbers for Seattle, but they've been about average versus tight ends this year. I think that those numbers will go up because of Goddard and Rodgers, but just looking at the quarterback situation, looking at the fact that he's coming off so many big games that at this point, maybe you look to kind of take him away a little bit more. I know defenses generally have been focusing in on Steve Slayton. I know defenses have generally been focusing in on Darius Slayton. And that's why we've seen Shepard have some decent games and Engram. But Ingram's just made so much noise over his last few that I think you're going to start to see some more coverage rotate his way.
All right. You know, random aside, I think in previous years of the show, we would end with a quote unquote bold call. And we haven't done that this year. But since we actually have the time and since there are, you know, just the three of us, let's impromptu, maybe do a bold call for week 13, which would be something like no game gets canceled this week. That's my bold call. No cancellations, no postponements for week 13. A totally normal or as normal as can be expected week of professional football for all of the fans in week 13. Sean, I'm going to kick it to you. What is a relatively bold proclamation that you have for week 13?
Dallas Goedert will remain a top five tight end, even if Zach Ertz returns.
That's a good one. And very, very possible too, because Zach Ertz, even if he returns, he might not return. Raybon, give us a bold call.
Alvin Kamara, RB1 this week.
Overall.
I say Sean Payton's been saving him up. He just lets him loose in this game because it's the second game against Atlanta. So he has to go with a completely opposite game plan that he went in the first one.
Yeah. RB1 on his team. I could see that. That's a good RB1 bold call.
Of the slate. That's, nah. That's too easy.
All right. That's going to do it for this show. Be sure to check out our rankings, Sean's tiers, Raybon's DFS breakdown, and my positional breakdowns. You can follow Sean, Chris, and me in the Action Network app at @_oddsmaker, Chris Raybon, and Matt F. The Oracle. Use the app to get real-time odds and track your bets for free. Please subscribe to and rate, interview the show, and listen and download on Spotify. See you again next episode.
We're finished talking.